Good morning. It's 11 minutes before the hour. You're listening to NPR's Morning Edition over Raven Radio, KCAW in Sitka, where it's 50 degrees under overcast skies. Today's Wednesday, July 18th, 2012. I'm Robert Woolsey with Raven News. The federal government is allocating $250,000 to Pacific states to deal with debris washing ashore from the Japanese tsunami. As APRN's Peter Granitz reports, Alaska's senators say the amount is astonishingly low.
The National Atmospheric and Oceanic Administration, or NOAA, announced a grant that will give Alaska and four other states up to $50,000 apiece to help clean up debris washing ashore.
Can you record my eye roll?
That's U.S. Senator Lisa Murkowski. She says she's offended the federal government would give states such a small amount to deal with a problem so big and then divide it between them.
So the state of Alaska, which has 33,000 miles of coastline, more than all the coastline of all of the other states, is to get their $50,000. Talk to the people of Yakutat, what they are already putting into their landfill from the collection of the debris off the beach.
NOAA would not comment for this story, but at a Senate hearing in May, NOAA's David Kennedy said the Marine Debris Program just does not have the money for a large-scale cleanup. And the bulk of debris is not ashore yet. Most of the estimated 1.5 million tons of refuse is expected to make landfall over the next 2 years. Senator Mark Begich called the amount of money outrageous and says he'll speak with the NOAA administrator this week.
They'll probably claim that's the only money they could find. Well, this should be an interagency activity. They should figure out how to get the resources, because when it comes in large volume, the net result is, you know, FEMA is going to be at the table then.
FEMA, the Federal Emergency Management Agency, helps coordinate disaster responses. Begich says this is certainly not the last of the federal money for the project. And Murkowski, who's on the Appropriations Committee, says there could be a way to get some money for the project on an Interior Department spending bill. But whether the Senate actually takes up another funding measure this year remains unclear. In Washington, D.C., I'm Peter Granitz.
The Sitka Ranger District is wrapping up a major road project begun 2 years ago with federal stimulus funding. A much-anticipated cabin replacement is just getting underway. Anne-Marie LaPalme manages cabins and trails for the district. Users who haven't been on the Mud Bay Road in the last couple of years will find things dramatically changed. The deep, muddy ruts are gone, as are the large cobbles that could bring a mountain bike to a dead stop or jolt an ATV onto two wheels. It's now a packed gravel surface, crowned for drainage, but not for speed. The roughly 7-mile route across Kruzoff Island is crossed by over 20 water bars, 2-foot-deep ditches designed to keep water off the road surface. LaPalme says the water bars are not there for traffic control.
You know, we've gotten various comments about those. People have been used to going faster on motorized vehicles on the trail, and this, you know, they can't go as fast as they were prior to them being put in. And we've gotten people commenting that they're really fun to drive through on bicycles. And so, you know, people have different opinions about them. But the primary purpose is to get the water off the road so that, you know, we can retain the surface.
The Forest Service has spent $600,000 on the project with funding from 2009's American Recovery and Reinvestment Act, the so-called federal stimulus bill that polarized Washington politics but kept companies like Sitka's TM Construction rolling. Owner Todd Miller had 6 employees on the Mud Bay project, driving trucks and backhoes and crushing gravel. Miller told KCAW in 2010 that the federal dollars were critical.
It's definitely given projects like this an opportunity to exist where possibly the funding wouldn't have become available for it. I guess it's been great to have the work.
Besides resurfacing the road, TM installed 2 steel bridges, one 80 feet long and the other 20 feet, and rebuilt the trail to the North Beach cabin with a 2-foot layer of gravel. She says that TM has staged 2 supplies of additional gravel to apply to the road in the future. Up on West Chichikov, the future is happening now. The much-anticipated replacement of the White Sulphur Springs cabin is underway. Another local business, Kelly Pellet of Pellet Enterprises, has the contract. This might be considered a plum job for a builder, except for one small detail.
He can't use motorized equipment. He can't use mechanized transportation. so he's very limited about what type of tools he can use.
White sulfur is located in the West Chichikov-Yacobi Wilderness area, and federal rules don't allow the use of gas-powered equipment. Pellet worked on the Greentop cabin 2 years ago, also in wilderness. LaPalm says he's perfected a system that makes sense under the rules.
He manufactured and assembled these cabins down in Prince of Wales and assembled them and disassembled them, so he's done a lot of the work already.
The cabin will be constructed from D-logs, which are flat on one surface. Despite following wilderness protocol, the White Sulfur Project has generated some controversy. Forest planners originally considered eliminating the cabin altogether, along with the bathhouse, to return the site to a condition more in character with wilderness. The forest supervisor eventually settled on replacing the cabin, but not the bathhouse. Now that decision will be subject to review following numerous appeals in favor of rebuilding the bathhouse as well. LaPalm says it's uncertain about how long it may take to resolve the appeals. The existing bathhouse is permanently closed, condemned, in fact, for being structurally unsound. But LaPalm says all is not lost for the intrepid willing to soak al fresco.
There's an outdoor pool. It's relatively shallow, but it's right next to the bathhouse. So there's an alternative place to soak once the site is open again when the cabin is complete.
The new White Sulfur cabin should be open for users beginning in August. You can find a link to the Tongass Forest Supervisor's Record of Decision for the White Sulfur Cabin and Bathhouse at our website, kcaw.org. Animal rights advocates made their concerns known to the Ketchikan Gateway Borough Assembly on Monday, with speakers offering complaints about the borough's animal control program. The issue wasn't on the Borough Assembly meeting agenda, but public comment and assembly discussion lasted about 2 hours. KRBD's Layla Carey has more.
It all started with a criminal case in which the borough dropped animal abuse charges against a woman in exchange for her testimony in a child sex abuse case. Court records show that Julie Carson had been charged with 25 minor offenses, including 15 for failure to provide humane care to animals. The remaining charges were for failure to obtain animal licenses and failure to immunize. Borough attorney Scott Brandt Erickson says the borough had planned to prosecute.
We were contacted by the DA's office and requested to drop the charges or somehow help facilitate getting testimony that would be necessary to prosecute a serious felony offense. We went along with the DA's office request. I believe that it was the proper thing to do in the circumstances. I would do the same were it to occur again.
Those who spoke during public comment agreed the child abuse charges were more important, but questioned part of the plea agreement that returned three of the dogs to someone designated by their former owner. Susan Thompson of the Ketchikan Humane Society says the designated caregiver could transfer the animals back to the woman who has moved out of state. Thompson says the borough could keep the dogs in Ketchikan by asking local veterinary clinics to not issue health certificates for the three dogs. Without health certificates, animals can't fly or cross through Canada. Thompson says the borough's animal control ordinances are inadequate. She says she and others have been working with borough officials to improve them.
If the borough's attorney cannot find a way to support and enforce even the weak ordinances already in place, how can he possibly hope to have any effectiveness once the more stringent ordinances take effect? This has been a disheartening realization, and we are considering withdrawing from the task force and finding other ways to continue our rescue work.
Laura Atwood says she's passionate about prosecuting those who hurt animals. She says she's upset the borough returned three dogs to the potential control of the person charged with inhumane treatment. She says 11 dogs were seized by animal control officers.
They state that the animals had little access to basic essentials, such as food or water, and the home was covered in filth and feces. Animals were kept in cages far too small for them to stand up or even turn around in, and appeared to spend significant portions of their day in those cages. The veterinary report in this case indicates that all of the dogs examined by a licensed veterinarian indicate malnutrition, some to the most extreme level possible for the dogs to still be alive.
Brant Erickson says that in addition to the dogs, the borough sees ducks and rabbits from the woman's home. All but the three dogs in question were forfeited. He agrees that those dogs might end up back in the woman's care if they left the borough. Brant Erickson says the woman also could obtain other animals because she's no longer in the borough's jurisdiction. Borough manager Dan Bockhorst says both of Ketchikan's veterinary offices have agreed to not issue health certificates for the three dogs. The borough's animal protection director, Kelly Ludwig Johnson, says the woman was running a breeding operation out of her home and had the permit required to own more than five dogs. Ludwig Johnson says there are four known pet breeding operations in Ketchikan. She says the woman's home was inspected, but officers were not given complete access. Ludwig Johnson says that in the future, she'll deny permits to those who don't allow a full inspection. She notes that her department's budget is restrictive.
I requested in my budget to have an extra person so that I could be more proactive than reactive, and that was shot down. So I have to continue my quest of trying to deal with everything that goes on with three people.
Later in the meeting, the Assembly voted 5-1 to increase the Animal Protection Department budget. Assemblymember Glenn Thompson voted no. In Ketchikan, I'm Layla Carey.
The U.S. Coast Guard in Juneau is hosting the Buoy Tender Olympics today. The event is intended to highlight the skills needed to work aboard a buoy tender. It comes in the midst of the annual buoy tender roundup, which the Coast Guard says includes cutters based in Alaska, Washington, and British Columbia. You can see a photo of the roundup on our website, kcaw.org. Zone weather forecast today for Sitka and Port Alexander calls for cloudy skies, highs around 59, west winds 10 miles per hour. Tonight, cloudy, chance of rain south of Sitka late, lows around 50, southwest winds 5 miles per hour, shifting to the east late. Tomorrow, chance of rain in the morning, then rain in the afternoon, highs around 62. This is Raven Radio, KCAW in Sitka.